Hear the Gospel of Christ according to Luke, chapter 16, beginning at verse 1. Jesus said to the disciples, "There was a rich man who had a manager, and charges were brought to him that this man was squandering his property. So he summoned him and said to him, 'What is this that I hear about you? Give me an accounting of your management, because you cannot be my manager any longer.' Then the manager said to himself, 'What will I do now that my master is taking the position away from me? I'm not strong enough to dig, and I'm ashamed to beg. I have decided what to do so that when I am dismissed as manager, people may welcome me into their homes.' So summoning his master's debtors one by one, he asked the first, 'How much do you owe my master?' He answered, 100 jugs of olive oil.' He said to him, 'Take your bill, sit down quickly, and make it 50. Then he asked another, "And how much do you owe?" He replied, 100 containers of wheat. He said to him, "Take your bill and make it 80. And his master commended the dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly. For the children of this age are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than are the children of light. And I tell you, make friends for yourselves by means of dishonest wealth, so that when it is gone, they may welcome you into the eternal homes. Whoever is faithful in a very little is faithful also in much. And whoever is dishonest in a very little is dishonest also in much. If then you have not been faithful with the dishonest wealth, who will entrust to you the true riches? And if you have not been faithful with what belongs to another, who will give you what is your own? No slave can serve two masters. For a slave will either hate the one and love the other, or be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth." In the name of the God who laughs in glee when we are confounded. Amen. This week in the New York Times, there was a report on the work of a Jonathan Haidt, a moral psychologist. He is examining where our moral rules come from. Philosophers say reason. Theologians say God. However, biologists are beginning to say evolution. As natural selection and survival of the fittest make up the engine that runs evolution, this seems an odd conclusion. They seem to reward only selfish values. So how can they be the source of morals? Biologists respond by pointing out that as social animals, we have had to learn how to curb selfishness if there is to be any payoff for living together. Haidt argues that because of evolution and our social nature, we each contain two moral systems. In evolutionary time, one developed before humans had language, and the other one after. Simplifying greatly his arguments, the one before language is our gut response, controlled by our primitive brain. The second system that required language was moral judgment. In our day-to-day lives, we have gut responses. But then the second moral system kicks in, giving us a plausible rationalization for why we feel the way we do. His scientific way of trying to differentiate the two systems was to probe the emotion of disgust.
He would propose situations that caused a reaction of disgust in his subjects. He was looking for situations that his subjects knew were wrong, but just couldn't quite explain why. He calls it moral dumbfounding. Well, Jesus was way ahead of him in his research. Our parable today of the unjust steward is a case of moral dumbfounding. It disgusts our moral sensibilities. Clearly, the steward is a self-serving sleaze. Before being in trouble with the boss for mismanagement, he rips off the farmers. When he learns he's going to be fired, he rips off his boss. Surely, if right is right and wrong is wrong, Jesus is going to condemn him for his immorality. Instead, he shocks us by telling us the boss commends him for his shrewdness, and then Jesus tells us to do likewise. Luke is the only gospel writer brave enough to include this dumbfounding story, but then he tries to rationalize it with red herrings about being faithful in little so as to be faithful in much, and reminding us we can't serve the two masters of God and money. While true, they have absolutely nothing to do with the parable. They fail to rationalize our disgust with either the steward or Jesus' injunction. In fact, the parable has confounded theologians throughout history, some even choosing to live in denial, like Augustine, who said, "I can't believe this story came from the lips of my Lord." New Testament scholars, while having many diverse and often conflicting explanations for the parable, all agree it's the toughest one Jesus gave. It's tough because we can't rationalize it easily. We can't put it on that shelf in our brain where we keep everything we've made up our minds about. For that reason, I think Augustine is wrong. It's not the only thing I think Augustine was wrong about. But he was definitely wrong about this. Jesus told parables and never explained them to open our minds to greater self-knowledge, not to give us a list of moral injunctions that we can confidently refer to. Jesus wasn't about giving us rules. He came to give us entry into the kingdom of God he was describing in the parables. Every 3 years in the church's lectionary, we have to ask how this parable belongs on the key ring to the kingdom. Rather than offer you a nice, neat explanation, as if I had one, I'd like to share my reaction to it. I think it's a parable that suggests in the kingdom, morality isn't about keeping score. Too often, morality is used to exercise power over one group by another. In these instances, morality seems to be about winners and losers. Here's how I got there. The rich landowner is used to winning. He's rich, after all. But he is not getting the return he expects. So he plans to fire a steward who is clearly going to be the loser in this situation. The steward, who up until news of his impending dismissal, has been winning at the expense of the farmers. They have clearly been the losers on his scorecard. Because the steward abhors hard labor and fears it will be hard to find employment in what he is good at, being a scheming scumbag, decides if he is going to win in this situation, everyone has to win. he wipes out the score by generously reducing the farmers' debts. They now think the rich landowner is not a blood-sucking oppressor after all, but a hero of the people. The landowner, who's been given honor, is trapped. Can't very well fire his steward now. He'd lose the farmer's high opinion of him, which seems to matter. If he sacks him, everyone loses. If he keeps him on, everyone wins. If everyone wins, why keep score? That idea in itself is dumbfounding. Morals matter. We all know that. Life is all about following the rules and keeping score. Of course, it is inconvenient to remember that who is being moral and who is being immoral is a matter of perspective. In Israel, the morals game is played by a Palestinian youth outraged by the conditions in his refugee camp, throwing a Molotov cocktail at an Israeli troop carrier. The Israeli government responds to this immoral act by bulldozing down his parents' home. Hamas responds with a suicide bomber in a marketplace. Israel invades Lebanon. It's the way of the world. It's all about scorekeeping. On a global level, it is or has been true in Ireland, Iraq, and India, and just about anywhere else we can think of. We don't like it, but it's a tit-for-tat world. It shows up in all aspects of our lives. Just listen to a session of Parliament or the conversation over our dinner table. We have to keep score because we have to look out for ourselves and keep the ledger in balance. How else are we to protect our self-interest? We have to keep the self-interest of others in check. We need power to do so. And defining what is moral is one of the arrows in our quiver. In this kind of world, Jesus' unjust steward is an outrage, not because he once took advantage of the poor, but because he undermined the powerful to save his neck. I think Jesus is trying to shake up this kind of world. He confounds us by suggesting that morals may be better enforced with our vulnerability than power. It is a vulnerability born of recognizing we all have the same needs, and they are all legitimate. How we get them met is the problem. A developmental psychologist, Abraham Maslow, supports this idea. At the base level, we all need water, food, shelter to survive. Until we have those, we aren't aware of having any other needs. But once they are assured, we need security in a family or tribe that protects us from hunger and violence. When we feel that need is met, we discover we have other needs. We need to be loved. We need friendship and a sense of belonging. Those fortunate enough to have that then are aware of the need for self-respect and the esteem of others. But even that is not enough. Never underestimate our capacity to need. Esteemed, we then need meaning and purpose in our lives and a feeling that we're living up to our potential. Surprisingly enough, even that's not the end of our needs. Once we find meaning and purpose, Maslow says, then we have a need for something called self-actualization. I guess if I ever get up that far in the pyramid, I might fully understand what that means. But I think of it as living under God's reign, a place I will feel fully integrated and connected, at peace with my neighbor, my environment, my God, and myself. It might even be a place where there are no higher needs. John's gospel calls it having abundant life. Jesus' parable tells us we all have the same needs to get to the kingdom, but we are in different places in the journey at any given moment. The farmers are focused on the very essentials of life, food and shelter. The steward is focused on needing job security. The landowner, who has acquired many of the more basic needs, looks for esteem and honor. When Jesus tells us to do as the shrewd steward, seek to meet everyone's needs, it is reminiscent of the aphorism that reminds us, while climbing the ladder of success, be careful whom you step on. You may meet them on the way back down. As long as morality is rationalized with power over others, we'll have to keep score. The world will always be about winners and losers. If we are as vulnerable as the steward, recognizing our mutual needs and our fragile place on the pyramid, we can throw away the scorecard and have a different world. Yes, it's a tough parable. It's even dumbfounding. But not because it's that hard to rationalize, but because it is hard to trust our gut, that it is better to be vulnerable, even in a world still ruled by power. Yet to live abundantly, we must. Jesus reminds us that if a scumbag can pull it off, so can we.